This is WLRN News. I'm Alicia Zuckerman. When Ruth Behar was 9 years old, she and her family were in a horrible car accident, and she had to spend most of the next year in a full-body cast. This was a few years after they left Cuba for Queens, New York, in the early 1960s after Fidel Castro took power. Behar became an anthropologist and a writer. She's a professor at the University of Michigan. She recently published her first novel. It's autobiographical, and it's for kids. It's called Lucky Broken Girl. I do want to look at this idea of being thought of as not smart because you don't know English.
Yeah, and that is autobiographical. I remember that very distinctly, arriving and just being placed in a regular classroom. And you just had to sink or swim. I mean, there weren't ESL, you know, classes, English as a second language classes, and you know, in the mid-60s. And I remember knowing that I was in the dumb class because kids know that. I mean, of course, that's not what it was called, but kids called it that. And that's the terminology that I'm using in the book. But that was the class that the foreign kids were in. And I remember that so distinctly and kind of how humiliating it felt. And I remember seeing math problems placed on the board and knowing the answer, but not knowing how to say it in English, and how awful that felt.
And this book looks at the Cuban immigrant, Cuban exile experience. It looks at the Jewish Cuban exile experience. The Yiddish and Spanish are sort of mixed together. Mm-hmm. And your grandmother actually calls you Shana Madela, which means pretty little girl or sweet little girl, which is what my grandmother called me.
It's so beautiful.
It is. But then, you know, your very good friend down the hall is Ramu, and his family is from India and they speak Bengali. And then you have a friend who is from Belgium, and they speak French, and then later, as it turns out, Arabic. And it's just this amalgam of different languages and also immigrant children. Is that what your childhood was like?
That is exactly what my childhood was like. Immigrants from many, many different places, you know, all colliding on this one street, actually, of all these, you know, identical brick buildings. So I wanted to show how there's different ways to be an immigrant. With Ramu, you know, that he was being pressured, like, don't get too close to the other kids. We don't want you to lose your Bengali identity.
One of the moments in the book that really struck me was that the parents have to sleep on a sofa bed because it's a one-bedroom apartment, right? And the sofa bed is a Castro convertible.
Yes.
And the sort of, like, insult of that, to have to sleep on a bed. I think the line is named with the same name as the man who stole our country.
Yes, that's pretty close, yes. And that is a true autobiographical fact. And I found it so strange because I'd hear these stories, Castro did this and Castro did that, and he's this terrible man. So why are they sleeping on a bed, you know, named Castro convertible? It just made absolutely no sense to me as a child. I thought, did Castro somehow, like, come to the United States and own these sofa beds? So that's why that little detail is in the book.
And that is such a window into the mind of a child. You were really in a full body cast for a year or almost a year.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What did you put in the book that you wish had actually happened?
Well, you know, Ruthie is a more thoughtful version of me as a child. So Ruthie has the same experience, the very traumatic experience. But Ruthie is a lot smarter, savvier, more empathetic. She realizes things that I think took me 50 years to realize. So that's something I think is Ruthie reconstructed from this perspective many, many years later.
One of the other things that I loved in the book was that Ruthie, while she's laid up in bed for all of these months, writes letters and prays to God, the God that she knows through her Jewish tradition, but also Shiva, and then her neighbor, who she becomes very close with, her Mexican neighbor,
Chicho,
introduces her to the artist Frida Kahlo, the great Mexican artist. And she sort of thinks of Frida Kahlo as almost like a guardian angel type, and then prays to all three.
Well, I think that is, you know, the Jewish child who is being given a very open sense of what Jewishness means. And I think a lot of Cuban Jews have this sense of, you know, sometimes they will pick up a little bit of Santeria belief and mix that in with their Jewish beliefs. And There's a moment in the book that I really loved writing where her mom is asking her if she remembers her nanny back in Cuba. And the mother tells Ruthie, oh, and you know, your nanny has gone to the shrine of San Lázaro, the shrine of St. Lazarus, you know, very, very important shrine on the outskirts of Havana where people go. And Ruthie asks, well, you know, is that okay? Can we accept this, you know, if I'm Jewish? And then her mother says, well, everything that's done in goodwill, I think we should accept. And so Ruthie goes, oh, good, because that's what I think too. And so at the end, when she makes one of her final prayers, it's to God. It's to Shiva, it's to Frida Kahlo, and she also invokes San Lázaro as one more, you know, one more supernatural spirit, just for good measure, that might be able to help her.
This is the first novel that you've written. Well, it's your first novel.
Yes.
And it's the first time you've written for children. The themes are intense. I mean, first of all, in this car accident, five boys die.
Yes.
Teenage boys die in the accident. And then there's this idea that terrible things happen and you don't have control over them. Mm. And I wondered about taking these themes on for children.
Yeah, it was a risk that I took because I had tried to tell the story much earlier, but from the perspective of an adult woman looking back on this experience and feeling the repercussions of this experience, because I've had panic attacks and other things, and I don't like to drive on highways. So I was trying to write it as an adult woman looking back, a memoir in that sense. But then I just started really imagining it from the child's perspective and seeing how children are aware of so much. You know, kids do have to come to terms with death and catastrophe. And one of the things that helped me write the book when I was starting it, my brother made this offhand comment, and he said, I don't think you remember what an active little girl you were, like how you jumped around and like how active and athletic you were. And when he said that, I realized that I didn't remember, that I had changed so much as a result of that year. I was 9, 10 years old, that I didn't remember that Ruthie. I had become this other Ruthie, this very contemplative, shy, quiet, you know, retreating Ruthie who liked to read books. And we see that in the book, Ruthie's personality changes. She uses the word metamorphosis, the idea of, you know, that sometimes life puts you on an unexpected path, but if you can accept being on that new path, you'll go to places you never imagined. The school, my public school in New York, got me a tutor who came to my bedside and taught me and brought me books, brought me math problems, brought me Highlights magazine. And I think of that as the year that I became smart because I couldn't move. I had a lot of time to think and to contemplate and to read a lot more books than I had ever read before. We didn't have books in the house. You know, my parents weren't going to go out and buy books when we needed food, you know, so we didn't get books. So it was a time of great suffering, but it was also a time of very positive transformation. And that's why it's a lucky broken girl, because she's definitely broken, but the luck of finding her path through this process.
The name of the book is Lucky Broken Girl, and Ruth Behar will be at Books and Books in Coral Gables in conversation with her friend, the poet Richard Blanco, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Ruth, thanks so much.
Thank you. It's great to speak to you.
This is WLRN News. I'm Alicia Zuckerman.